Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the New Mainstream podcast, where we explore the impact of multicultural consumers on marketing and media. I'm your host, Mario Carrasco, and co-founder of Think Now. Excited to introduce our guest today, Hanon Majithia, Diversity Recruiting Manager, University Relations at Eastman. Welcome, Hanon.
Thank you so much, Mario. I'm excited for today, and thank you for having me on the podcast.
Yeah, look forward to our conversation. Before we dive in, tell us a little bit about like your career. Where did you start? How did you start working at Eastman?
Yeah. Thanks for the question. So I went to the University of Tennessee for my undergrad, and I was doing a business and communications type role at the time, or studying for that. And I was lucky enough that my last semester, I was presented with an opportunity to start working for a company called Amazon. And as soon as I graduated, I moved to Nashville, Tennessee, and was supporting supply chain logistics, and did that for a few years. And then for those of you that, you know, that follow Amazon, they opened their second headquarters in the Nashville area in 2019, and that really catapulted me into the next set of opportunities. I was sort of in the right place at the right time, and was approached to be in a career that was HR facing, and I really didn't have any interest or any background at the time, but that opportunity, short term at least, provided me with better work-life balance, more access to my family. So I was like, yeah, let's give this a shot. And very quickly, after taking on that more corporate facing role, I was able to immerse myself in a lot of different HR realms. So learned a lot about hiring and staffing and you name it, compensation, benefits. But then in 2020 with George Floyd and the really sort of pivot for a lot of corporate America into this more like DEI focused lens and more targeted hiring initiatives, I was given the opportunity to lead the North America HBCU recruiting for our early career talent pipeline. And that really put me in a spot where I was able to learn so much about just diversity hiring, but just learning a lot more about underrepresented communities, different nuances from a early career talent perspective, how to hire, and that journey and that experience led to my next role, which was working as a program manager in DEI, and a lot of that, you know, was so insightful.
This is still at Amazon.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was just bouncing around, learning all these different things. So I worked as a DEI program manager for a little while. And while I was doing that, I was also in pursuit of my master's degree. So did that and did it online. I would say thanks to COVID, I was able to keep my employment and pursue school. And then I graduated in 2021 and was really curious to see what else was out there, just in terms of what other companies were doing, what other opportunities were there that would align with my skill sets. And Eastman ended up being sort of a gem in the backyard type thing. Eastman's corporate headquarters is located in Northeast Tennessee, which is where my family is originally from. And so when I was exposed to that company, they, at the time, you know, all the things that they were talking about in terms of their vision, their goal, their IND visions and what they wanted to accomplish really kind of lined up with how I wanted to challenge myself. So in the fall of 2021, I switched over to Eastman after about 6 years at Amazon. And now currently in my role, I oversee Eastman's early career talent pipeline. So their internships, co-ops, PhD, and full-time hiring, which is about—
That's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you.
I love, you know, I think there's a lesson there, like, you know, challenge yourself, expose yourself to new roles within an organization, because you never know when you're going to find something that you may not have thought of originally, but that becomes a passion for you, it sounds like.
Absolutely. It was all about, you know, like sort of being in the right place at the right time, but also like making my skill sets known, because then I was able to just transfer that from role to role and hopefully do it justice.
Yeah. So I want to talk more about your role, but want a little bit of background, like about Eastman. So I know Eastman when they were Eastman Kodak and primarily about film, but I know it's much, much more than that, obviously. So like, tell us a little bit about Eastman and what they do.
Yeah. So that's a really good question. So the way that I like to describe Eastman to those that may have never heard of it, is that, you know, in comparison to a company, that's very, it's very obvious what they do. So, you know, Hershey, they have chocolate, right? A company like Eastman, we are a chemical intermediates company. So a lot of the products that we make are sort of that middleman product. And then you see the final version of it. So paint, plastic, rubber, glass, things like that. There's an interesting stat out there that says 40 to 50% of the items that you will see in a grocery store are things that are made from Eastman plastics or Eastman glass, Eastman material, whether it's the shelving that your products are on, whether it's the plastic that holds your cleaners or your egg cartons or whatever that looks like. A lot of that does come from Eastman. So some of our more like popular products that people might know about, the plastic that's in Warby Parker glass, Nalgene plastic bottles, some of our high-end like makeup brands you might have heard of, like Laniege. I might be saying that wrong, actually, but Laniege. Makeup is there. We're in fibers. We're in clothing material. So you name it, Eastman has a hand in it. You probably just don't know that Eastman's a part of the process.
Very cool. Yeah, so I imagine there's so many. There's an opportunity to work in a variety of roles, right? Like obviously, I think first like chemical engineering, but there's all marketing, sales, where you're at. So you had mentioned when you were at Amazon, you kind of learned about the specifics or kind of the specific challenges when recruiting at diversity or at universities. You worked with HBCUs. Tell us a little bit more than that, like more about that. Like, how has your role evolved? You're still focused on university relations. Like, what's the mission there in terms of your new role here at Eastman?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I think there are a lot of overlaps when we talk about early career talent and HBCU recruiting. There is an overlap in terms of where it's the same demographic, right? You're looking at the same age group. It's going to be Gen Z. But I think where I've really been able to kind of evolve just in my professional output and my understanding of this area is that there are so many variables that go into the early career talent pipeline that are ever changing. So we talk, like I said, Gen Z versus millennials, and a lot of times, just based on market research, you see that students these days want more transparency when it comes to pay scale. They want more work-life balance. They want more flexibility in the workplace. And that's not necessarily specific to a specific race or gender. That's overall what students are looking for. And so what I think I've really had to do for myself professionally is figure out how to tell a story and be an advocate for the right population at the right time. And so, for example, you know, we talk about for a lot of our Gen Z students, they will come in and they'll ask, you know, like, what do you offer from an inclusion and diversity standpoint? What sort of trainings do you offer? What sort of employee resource groups do you have? And that sort of communication goes to everyone all the time. And then when you think about, excuse me, going to an HBCU, for example, we're going to want to highlight what our Black and African American population does within the company. What are their efforts? How are we trying to increase and drive awareness of that population and that community? And so really like tweaking and having nuances, has been game changer for me in my career, because now I feel a little bit more competent when I get put into situations of, hey, how do we diversify to this Native American population, or how do we diversify to make sure we're exposing all of our jobs to the right female talent, things like that. So does that answer the question?
It does. Yeah. And what you're saying is really in line that with research we've done among consumers, Gen Z and millennial consumers, from a B2C standpoint, they are holding companies accountable. Like they, when they purchase products, for example, they want to make sure that companies have a diversity and inclusion statement that they're following up on. They also want to make sure like other things like sustainability, environmental. I guess I'm curious, you know, talk about storytelling and highlighting those parts about Eastman or whatever company that you're working for. Do you ever, or is part of your role going back to the company and letting them know about feedback that you're getting at an HBCU and universities, and like, how is that conversation happening?
Yeah, that is probably one of the most challenging parts of my role, and probably the most rewarding at the same time. A lot of times we are the subject matter expert when it comes to early career talent, but then we are the liaison between the student and the business. And then for the business, we're almost like consultants, right? Where we're giving them data, we're showing them historical trends, and then we're trying to tell a story of what we should do and what we should consider in the future. And so a lot of times we do rely on anecdotal feedback. We rely on what we're hearing from other employers, and then what we hear specifically from students, because that's what makes the difference, right? When we talk about early career talent pipeline, the whole goal is to bring in diverse candidates, but the goal is really to keep them, right? We can bring in and we can hire as many people as we want, but if we don't have good methods of keeping people in the workforce, people will leave. And that's just the reality of any industry. And so a lot of times we leverage like, hey, we went to this university and we experienced this, but then we went to this university and we experienced this too. We should allocate some funds and resources to attack this problem or to help strengthen this argument or whatever that looks like. And I think we're seeing a shift in sort of the power, where candidates really do have the power in this time and age to question us on a lot of things. I'll share a recent example. A lot of times, so for our early career talent interview guides that we have, we teach our hiring managers on interview etiquette, you know, what are some behavioral questions you can ask? And one of the questions that we recently started including is asking a candidate what pronouns they would like to be referred to and how they like to address themselves. And we included that in the interview guide, and we were using it on campus. And a student said to us, "Hey, I took the job because you asked me what my pronouns were, and these other three people that I interviewed with, or these other three companies I interviewed with, didn't." And you know, for me, I entered the workforce in 2016, so really not too long ago, but I never really thought about that being a factor or criteria of why I would or would not have taken a job. And the fact that this person, that was their criteria of what they valued the most, it really makes you stop and think like, okay, what do we need to enhance? What do we need to make better from our side internally to make sure that we're attracting top quality and caliber candidates?
That's such a great anecdote that you shared, right? Because, I mean, same. I was in the workforce way before you are, way before, you know, pronouns and were a thing, right? Were something that were top of mind for candidates. But that's so important, not only from a recruitment standpoint, but also just think brands in general reaching out to consumers, right? And so I think about like, yeah, I guess how are you ensuring that it goes beyond the interview, or like, do you engage with who are you engaging with internally, like the head of DE&I, I don't know, or ERGs, like how are you making sure like, great, we got this interview part down, now this candidate's starting, like, you know, is that experience that they had that you've tailored for them to come in going to be consistent throughout their time at Eastman?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I've got to be honest, we're not 100% there yet. Our former CEO actually he quoted something at a global town hall, and he said, you know, Eastman's kind of like a really large ship. We do things the right way, but it does take us a long time to turn around. But once we turn around, we're going in the right direction and we're full steam ahead. And I think that's how we've really approached our DE and I, and even B, which is belonging. That's how we've approached that mindset, where it does take a village to drive change. And we recognize it's not just talent acquisition. It's not just our employee resource groups or just our inclusion and diversity team, but it's also our business leaders, our hiring managers, our HR specialists, and everyone has to be equally bought in to this idea of, hey, what are we doing to attract talent? What are we doing to make sure they feel good about, you know, moving to this area or starting in this role? And then once they're here, do they feel supported 6 months in, a year in, 3 years in? Specifically for early career talent, we leverage internal surveys quite often. And we do checkpoints. So we've seen a trend across our industry, specifically manufacturing and chemicals. The 3 years is really the time where people cut off. So at that 3 year mark, if you're not leaving to go to a competitor, you're going to stay, or you're switching industries. And so for us, it's really imperative to catch those students in that first 2 or 3 years and make sure, hey, do you feel connected to the company? Do you feel connected to the community? Do you have, obviously, everyone will have a supervisor, but do you have a mentor? Do you have an advocate, a sponsor? And do you have these touch points that you can reference if at any point you feel like you're questioning, you know, career trajectory, promotion, acclimation to area, or whatever that looks like for you.
Yeah, that's great. And I love your story because, particularly with Eastman, because I believe Eastman's like one of the longest running organizations in the US, right? And so it's like, to me, it's inspiring that if a company like Eastman that's been around so long, is able to do this and turn the ship, like you mentioned, like this big ship. What's some advice that you give that you would give for other companies? Like we have a lot, like we're one of the few podcasts focus on DE&I and multicultural marketing, reaching, you know, both from a talent perspective and a consumer perspective. Like, I feel like if Eastman can do it, anybody can do it. So what's some advice that you'd give to other DE&I professionals, maybe that are at a similar company, right? Large, longstanding organizations that wants to get DE&I going. Where should someone start?
Yeah. It's such a like toss up in terms of like, you know, pros and cons, where you're right, Eastman's been around for 100+ years, and so they've almost been sort of forced to innovate and adjust to trends and to different patterns. But and with that comes that responsibility of, are you staying current? Are you relevant? And I think something that I struggle with sometimes working in DEI, and I've heard a lot of peers express, is that constant the idea that there's always an issue at hand. There's never like a smooth sailing or everything is right. But I think that boils back down to the fact that there's no ceiling in DEI. There's no cap on how diverse an organization can be or how included. How can you measure that there's 100% inclusion? And so there's always going to be a challenge ahead of you. So what I really do, and what's worked for me, was making sure that I have, you know, certain boundaries in the workplace, and making sure that I focus a little bit on my mental health and what I can provide in the workplace, because I can only give if my cup is full, you know. But with that, I would say that it's important for any DEI professional to be in tune and in touch with what's going on socially and what's happening in the world. Our society, we're very much, I think corporate America is very triggered by events that happen in the media, right? Or things that happen in the world. George Floyd being a very prominent example of that, where so many companies shifted their entire recruiting model based on one event, right? As you know, they should have, and those some would argue that those measures should have already existed. So I think I would challenge and encourage my peers that work in this space to A, preserve themselves and set boundaries and provide, but then also like use the stuff that's happening in the world as your data to help enhance your culture internally. I think that that has been very helpful for me when I go back and tell stories to my leaders, my executive teams, hey, this is what we should be focused on and this is why. I think telling that story and using data to tell my story has really, really turned the page on adoption and buy-in.
That's great advice. Thank you. And also, it's so important, right, to take care of our own mental health. Because there, like you said, there's always going to be issues. There's never a goal that you're going to reach. And also D&I is like difficult work, I would say, from being in it myself from a B2C standpoint, but also just people I have on this podcast. It can take a toll on your mental health. So definitely taking care of yourself is paramount. While you were talking, you know, made me wonder, like, we have a unique opportunity with you. You're there talking to the new talent coming in. What's something that maybe people aren't aware of, right? Because to your point, companies are reactive to the media. I don't think the media captures what's happening on the university level. What are some trends that you're seeing that like are rising in terms of importance to new candidates that are thinking about joining the workforce? Like you mentioned pronouns. I think that's great. I think, you know, the fact that you've incorporated that into your intake has actually made someone come to Eastman. What are some other kind of anecdotal things that you've been seeing that are important to students?
Yeah, I will say first and foremost, students are really educated on what they want and don't want. I think when I first started working in the early career talent space, so many of the questions I got were focused on compensation, relocation, things like that. And now that's maybe 20 to 30% of the questions. Most of my questions now are around, what are you doing around sustainability? How are the products you make? And that's industry specific, but like, what are you doing for the earth? What are you doing for me in terms of, am I going to get on the job training? Am I going to have workshops and abilities to like cultivate more skill sets once I enter the workplace, which is such a great question to ask and something that I do think that people should demand from their employers. So that's a big one. And then the other thing that I see a lot is talking about promotion, progression, and development in terms of like, what are standard timelines? What's going to be expected of me to be able to really enhance my career? And I really do appreciate some of those questions because I don't think I was that sort of long-term thinking when I was entering the workforce. But I think for the most part, students do their research. They look at company websites. If you are a company in today's day and age and you don't have your inclusion and diversity report published online, chances are someone's going to ask you, like, where is it? Where can I access it? I'd like to see it. And a lot of major companies do include those reports online to read. So I think people will self-navigate and find a lot of answers. And the things that they don't find readily are the things they're going to ask about. So specific to IND, I would really encourage you if you're a company that hasn't published some of that data, to do so.
I love that. And I do love that about Gen Z, right? I feel like in the media, there's, they take a lot of hits on like negative aspects, but I feel like they're so much more savvy when it comes to holding corporations accountable. I think the environmental thing, environment and sustainability, I don't think it's specific to Eastman. I think for any corporation, whether you're in retail, whether you're chemical, manufacturing, people want to know, like, sustainability is up there in terms of importance. Like, what are you doing to help the earth, right? Climate change is a top issue of concern for this new generation. So I think that's another thing, right? And you could argue that it is closely linked to DE&I, right? We're seeing that the effects of climate change affect more communities of color and kind of the global South. So thanks for sharing those insights. So let's focus on some of your wins. Like since you've joined Eastman, like what are some things that you're proud of that you'd like to share?
That's a good question. I think one of the first things, and I don't think I'm unique in this, but probably most people that were working in 2021 and onwards, I think we saw such a quick pivot with COVID of switching all engagements to virtual. So everyone had to become fluent in how to engage through online recruiting platforms and virtual events. And then we saw this sort of hybrid ease in back to in person, and being able to see that for an industry that's very, Eastman is very used to the going in person, shaking hands, really building intimate relationships in person. And so to be able to get back to that and do it in a way that was like safe and sustainable and hit our recruiting demands was really nice this past year. Another big win is Eastman historically has been known to hire an abundance of engineers. That's been one of our most fruitful and longstanding pipelines. But over the last 2 years, we've been able to really expand that. And now we hire so many other professions, whether it's data science, IT, HR, you name it, to the point where our incoming class for this summer is about 200 folks, with a pretty even divide between engineering and then non-engineering disciplines. And I think that really has helped us with our brand awareness, as we continue to hope to stay, you know, in the game and stay relevant when it comes to our branding.
That's great. And then you touched on something. I'm just like off the cuff, like,
yeah.
What's the sentiment right now between remote, hybrid, and in office? Like, I feel like in the media, it's like, There's this narrative that younger people just want to stay at home forever. Like, is that true? Or like, what do you, what's the sentiment?
I think it's a little bit of a mix, right? Like, so I'm a good example. The company's based in Northeast Tennessee, but I'm a remote worker in Philly. It's so interesting because we have folks that come to us and say, not necessarily that they want remote. I think first and foremost, they want to know that remote options are available. They care more about the access of it more than actually wanting to be in a remote environment. Most of our students have come to us asking us for hybrid. So they like the idea of 1 or 2 days in office because they see the value in that sort of cooler talk and building relationships with leaders and peers and having that network. But then also they enjoy that flexibility of, hey, I want to spend some time with my family this weekend. I'll work from home. And I think Eastman, because we're, 100 plus years old, we are still adjusting and acclimating in certain business lines to kind of adopt to that fashion. But I think I'm a testament, and so many of my peers across the globe are testaments of things are changing. And I think that, Eastman is not unique in that sense. There's so many companies out there that are like, oh, how do we do this? But I think it's necessary. If you want to continue to expand and diversify your workforce, you have to do a little bit of that. I myself am curious on how that's going to change over the next couple of years. But fingers crossed, no more pandemics to worry about. So,
yeah, you and I both. So awesome. This has been a great conversation. Before we wrap up, like, we're finishing up the first quarter here in 2023. What are you excited about this year? Like, what's on your plate? Some milestones you're looking forward to?
Yeah. Man, so from an Eastman perspective, I'm really excited this year to continue to drive momentum on a lot of our business lines that have never had interns before, or have never really sought out early career talent. We've really come a long way in creating like a value proposition of what early career talent can bring to your team long term. And a lot of our businesses are really excited about it and are willing to try it. So this year is going to be kind of experimental for us in some of our business lines. So I'm looking forward to, adding some feathers to my hat in terms of my fluency of recruiting. And I think personally, I'm excited, and this is not necessarily related to Eastman, but for me personally, I recently moved to Philly and in the Northeast, and there are so many awesome DEI professionals in this area between, you know, New York, DC, Delaware, Jersey, Philly. And so I'm looking forward to growing my professional network this year and really connecting with other like-minded, strong talent to continue to have best practices that I can take back to my own company.
Love that. Thank you so much for joining us, Hennel. If people want to connect with you online or learn more about the D&I work that Eastman's doing, like what's the best way to connect with you or learn about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I am very active on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is the best way to get in touch with me. I'm open to virtual hangouts and coffees. And if you're in the tri-state area, happy to meet in person. But LinkedIn is the best way to find me. I'm always online.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining. And thanks everybody for listening. Thanks to everyone listening in. To get more multicultural insights, check us out at thinknow.com and follow us on social media. You can also subscribe to this podcast on your favorite platform. Final thank you to our producer, Lucas Martinez, who created our intro music and makes our podcast sound great. To email him, reach out to martinez.lucas.a@gmail.com.